96 degrees in the shade. Rehot in the shade. 96 degrees in the shade. Rehot.
Oh, yes.
In the shade.
Said it was 96 degrees.
Kicking off this week's broadcast of Radio Resistance with the sound of the Third World, 1865 or 96 degrees in the shade. And no, that's not a reference to the weather at the moment, although it has been pretty damn hot, record-breaking hot across the UK, in fact. But according to the right wing, there's no such thing as climate change. I mean, there's Barry Lewis of Derbyshire County Council who was just telling us, let them drink champagne. And of course, we've got Trump, who's a climate denier. And so is the subject of this next track by Steve White and the Protest Family. Bad Day for Bojo.
Who cares much for promises or for ticket offices or passengers or staff? He wants to axe 1,000 jobs, 1,000 livelihoods he'll rob while ruffling his hair. Oh my, he's such a laugh, but it's a bad day for Bojo, it's a good day for Bob Crow. The underground workers have all gone on strike, it's a good day for Bob Crow, it's a bad day for Bozo. He'd best get on his bollocks, Barclay's bike. He wants to close the ticket office. I read it in the Daily Boris. Replace it with a Costa coffee. Must be off his head. And he's attacked the workers' right to say enough, to go on strike. Let's have a ballot about the mayor instead, cos it's a bad day for Bojo, it's a good day for Bob Crow. The underground workers have all gone on strike, it's a good day for Bob Crow, it's a bad day for Bozo. He'd best get on his bollocks, Barclays by banjo. There's a moral to this story, and it's one we've told before. You vote for someone funny, they'll act above the law. So if you think the mayor is crazy, you wanna ride the tube in safety, join a picket line and show Bozo the door. Cos it's a bad day for Bojo, it's a good day for Bob Crow. The underground workers have all gone on strike, it's a good day for Bob Crow, it's a bad day for Bozo. He'd best get on his bollocks, Barclays bike. Yes, he'd best get on his bollocks, Barclays bike.
Count those Teeth White and Protest Family. Bad day for Bojo. Proof that Boris Johnson is not invincible and he can be defeated. All right, he's now the new Prime Minister at UK, having won the vote by Tory party members, let us not forget, by a landslide, approximately two-thirds in fact. But at the end of the day, he still doesn't have the backing of the vast majority of British people who didn't even get to vote in this particular election. Not that the other contender, Jeremy Hunt, would have been any good either. Anyway, there have been a number of protests already against the new Prime Minister, Boris Johnson. Indeed, on Wednesday, there were 5,000 people protested in London. We hope to have more about that in time for next week's broadcast. And there's been other demos across the UK, including on the Tuesday night when the result was announced in Sheffield.
We called this protest to say no more racist Tory leaders. And Boris Johnson, not our Prime Minister. In fact, only 99.86% of us have had a say in this Prime Minister. Only 92,000 people, 0.14% of the population, primarily all white, upper class, pensioners and male. So I think it's right to say that he's not our Prime Minister. And it was only a month ago that we had the odious Donald Trump in this country visiting. And now we have his twin, Boris Johnson, as our Prime Minister. And our protest tonight is to say, we will not tolerate your racism. We know you want to divide and rule. Bad hairdo is not the one thing that really he's got in common with Donald Trump. Actually, he's rich and he's a right-wing maniac who wants to impose neoliberal policies on us. We've got a number of speakers here tonight, and this event was called by Stand Up to Racism and the People's Assembly and supported by the Trade Union Council. So I'll ask Martin Mayer, who's the Secretary of the Trades Council, if he'll have a few words. So.
Yeah, thanks Maxine, and thanks very much to Stand Up to Racism and Sheffield People's Assembly for calling this first protest rally against Boris Johnson. Now, I don't know what sort of emotions you've got today. To a certain extent, my emotions are a bit mixed. First of all, on this, the most beautiful day we've had this summer, I just feel he's ruined my day to be elected. Am I surprised he's been elected? No, I don't think any of us would be surprised. It's been widely touted that Boris Johnson would win, and I don't think it's any surprise that 160,000 right-wing Tory racist members of the Conservative Party would have made that choice. But I am angry that our new Prime Minister is elected by such a small proportion of the population and not us, the people. And it makes it even more important that we call for a general election now whenever there is a change in Prime Minister. We want a general election to decide the future of this country. I'm not surprised that he's been elected, but I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed that we're going to have a right-wing buffoon leading this country, being the public face of Britain in the world. I'm worried about what he's going to do. We have, even as we speak, a growing international crisis in the Gulf. I don't believe this man has the judgment or the skill or the diplomacy to be able to solve that. And we also know that as a right-wing neoliberal politician of the worst order, he has very close links with Donald Trump. And we all know who is the most dangerous element in that international crisis that's been developing. We need a government and a prime minister that's going to stand up to the warmongering of Donald Trump and not just go along with it and be America's poodle. But I'm also very, very concerned about the implications for domestic policy in this country. Boris Johnson is a right-wing ideologue. He's a neoliberal. We know that when it comes to the main issues he's interested in, we saw this in his own election campaign to become leader, he's more interested in tax cuts for the rich than he is in reversing austerity. He's more interested in giving the benefits and largesse of government to his friends in the city than he is to solving the problems for ordinary working people. And we've had David Cameron, we've had Theresa May. They were bad enough as Tory Prime Ministers, but I'm very worried that this one is going to be even worse. We've had now almost 10 years of austerity, which has seen the wealth of this country handed over from the poor to the rich, from the many to the few. I'm worried about people on benefits, and particularly universal credit. He's shown no concern whatsoever for the desperate plight of the poorest people in our society, paying for a crisis that is not of their making. I'm worried too about the future of our public services, our NHS. If Boris Johnson is going to do a Brexit deal and then a trade deal with the United States, we all know that the threat of privatisation to our NHS is a huge concern for many of us that defend probably our most important institution in this country. And I'm also concerned about trade union rights and workers' rights. We've seen a Tory government already plough further into our rights with the 2016 Trade Union Act, taking away our right to go on strike in any legitimate and democratic way. I fear that Boris Johnson's going to add to that. He's going to take more rights away, and we've got to be sure that we're here to stop him. So what I do know is that we're all going to have to fight this new government of Boris Johnson. We've all got to get real and realise that we have to put that extra effort in We're going to have to do a lot of rallies like this. We're going to have to do a lot of protesting. We've got to make sure that the people of this country stand up and fight for a general election now. A general election as soon as possible. A Labour government that will fight for the many, not the few. Not a disastrous Tory government under Boris Johnson. Let's work together and achieve that. Thank you.
And like I say, however vocal his supporters may be, Boris Johnson is not invincible. Indeed, like May before him, he's in a very weak position, possibly even in a weaker position than May. I mean, the Tories are still divided, especially over Brexit, and Bojo, if anything, will be less able to bring the Tory factions together. Now, Corbyn has already called for a general election, and it's quite possible that we'll be seeing a vote of no confidence in the not-too-distant future. Now, we can help this along by supporting every strike, every demonstration by people who are the victims of Tory policies, whether those enacted by Boris Johnson, or whether those that were brought in under May or under Cameron. We can, by doing so, weaken Boris Johnson's Tory government still further and bring the Tories down. And on that note, back to the music. Going back to 87 with the sound of the Blow Monkeys. Celebrate the day. We'll be right back.
It doesn't mean a thing if you can't make it sing.
This is Radio Resistance News, brought to you courtesy of Socialist Worker newspaper. Boris Johnson was elected Tory leader on Tuesday and immediately faced multiple crises. And he presides over a Tory party that has rarely had less unity and discipline. To get rid of this vicious, racist Prime Minister and get a general election, we must fight on every front against austerity, racism and inaction over climate change. Cleaners and catering staff at a government department are on all-out strike for decent pay and conditions. The members of the PCS union are fed up with poverty wages and terrible sick pay policies. Having tried short strikes earlier this year, they have now moved to hard-hitting action. Donald Trump ordered hundreds of raids on suspected illegal migrants this month in a bid to spread fear. His infamous border concentration camps are crammed full. But migrants and activists are putting up stiff resistance to his divide and rule plans. Activists are preparing a vital counter-demonstration against supporters of jailed Nazi Tommy Robinson. Tommy's thuggish friends plan to march in central London on Saturday 3rd of August. It is important that they meet determined resistance. Also in this week's Socialist Worker. As the US and Britain escalate their threats, we must say no to war against Iran. 5 days of defiant action to save our planet from climate change culminated in scenes of unity between school climate strikers and Extinction Rebellion last Friday. There is increasing rejection of a rotten deal signed by some opposition leaders with the murderous Sudanese military. How capitalism robs us of our individuality and then attempts to sell a pale imitation of it back to us. The corruption and dodgy deals behind the 2012 Olympic Games in London. You can read Socialist Worker online at www.socialistworker.co.uk. That's www.socialistworker.co.uk. I can buy your copy of Socialist Worker in Chesterfield Town Centre each Saturday from 11 a.m. through till 12:30 p.m. Or pick up your copy at the Chesterfield Socialist Worker Forums, held each Thursday evening downstairs in Chesterfield Library from 7 p.m. Enter by the cafe browser entrance on Beatwell Street. Or you can get Socialist Worker delivered to your door. For more info, email swchesterfield@gmail.com. That's swchesterfield@gmail.com. Or phone or text 07919 486101. That's 07919 486101.
Socialist Worker is your paper.
Buy it, read it,
sell it.
To our shores, a misogynist racist came. He wasn't exactly intelligent and clearly quite insane. Tweet by tweet, the twittering twit did rant. He's making America hate again, so cross and ignorant.
it's good for families. Back over the wall, go mom and dad. Don't the chump, chump. Humpty Dumpty, send him back his race. His hate's not welcome. Make a plan, it's safe again. Don't the chump, chump. You see, this chump is the elephant in the room. The bully in the china shop. A trigger happy loon. We resist this twisted narcissist. Together we stand to send him back. He really won't be missed. Dumpty Dumpty, bigot in chief, snatches goods for families. Back over the wall, go mom and dad. Dumpty Dumpty, trump. Dumpty Dumpty, send him back. His racist hates are welcome. Make our planet safe again. Dumpty Dumpty, trump. Humpty Dumpty, bigot in chief, snatches kids from families. Back over the wall, go mom and dad. Dump the chump, chump. Humpty Dumpty, send him back. His racist hates are welcome. Make our planet safe again. Dump the chump, chump. We only want to send him far, far away. And for all the faults, God save the Queen from this fascist country. Snatches kids from families. Back over the wall, go mom and dad. Dump the chump, chump. Dumpty Dumpty, send him back. His racist hates not welcome. Make our planet safe again. Dump the chump, chump. Dumpty Dumpty, bigot in chief. Snatches kids from families. Back over the wall, go mom and dad. Dump the chump, chump. Dumpty Dumpty, send him back. His racist hates not welcome. Make our planet safe again.
Simon Ball there, live back at the beginning of June at the Chesterfield Top Trump demo. Numpty Trumpty. Now, I mentioned how Trump's now rounding up so-called illegal immigrants for detention and deportation. Well, not content with locking migrants in cages, keeping them incarcerated in terrible conditions, and forcing them to risk death in order to gain entrance to the US. Indeed, not content with calling Mexican people rapists and drug dealers and other vile slander, US President Donald Tinky Trump has now gone well below the belt with attacks on his opponents in Congress, naming five left-wing anti-racist ethnic minority Democrats, only two of whom were even born outside the US, and one of those came to the US as a young child, and telling them to go home to their crime-ridden countries. But the racism against Latinx people, which Trump is now exploiting, does go back much further than Trump. At last week's Chesterfield Socialist Worker Forum, Fran from Sheffield SWP traces the history of Latinx people from Columbus's time to the present day.
In 1492, Columbus lands in what is now Puerto Rico and Haiti. And he then enslaves all of the people who live, the indigenous people called the Taínos, and that is, and till they all died, and that's known as the Caribbean Holocaust. And he also spread syphilis by raping girls as young as nine, which is lovely. And then in 1521, Hernán Cortés from Spain, he conquers the Aztec Empire, what is now Mexico. And he uses a similar germ warfare, like Columbus spreading syphilis, and he spreads European smallpox, and within a year, two-thirds of the Aztec population have died. Then in 1524, we have the forced sort of conversion of the indigenous people to the Catholic religion, you know, the Spanish Inquisition. In 1531 marks the fall of the Incan Empire, which is now Colombia, Bolivia, Peru, Ecuador, and Chile. And this is Cortés' cousin Pizarro, and he uses the same germ warfare again. His cousin gave him some tips on that. And he also teamed up with the enemy tribe from Brazil called the Chanca to basically destroy the Incan Empire. So from 1535 to 1549, we have the creation of a vicero royalty. So members of the ruling class sent from Spain to South America to run the colonies, basically. So, in total, before the colonizers arrived, there was 73 million people living in the Americas. So there was 3 million Taino people who used to fight with wooden swords so they wouldn't harm their enemies, which is just adorable. 33 million Inca in South America, who are still the biggest empire of all time. They pioneered the concept of socialism before Karl Marx, and they had a binary code that predated computers. 30 million Aztecs in Mexico, they invented basketball, they had buildings made from gold, they had public spaces, marketplaces and aqueducts, and the destruction of their culture and language has been the most effective in history. And 7 million Apache, Comanche and Navajo living in North America. So from 73 million that were there, after colonization started to happen, there were only 3.65 million left. So we're looking like 95% of them just vanished off the face of the earth. So, before I carry on, I'm just going to say I'm going to refer to people as Latinx, and I don't know if people know what that means, but it's sort of a gender-neutral term instead of using Latino or Latino. Some people say Latinx, but I say Latinx because I feel that's how a Latin person would say it. So today, in America, Latin America are the second largest ethnic group after Caucasians. Despite their very large numbers, they're not really represented in the government or the media. I mean, obviously the American government is not entirely representative of any ethnic group, besides one. But Latin people are even less like represented because they can't fit into this racial binary that the US has. So they live a confusing life because they don't really know where they fit in those divides, because in South America, where they were primarily colonized by the Spanish and Portuguese, religion was the main division for people. So the Spanish colonizers wanted all indigenous people to convert to Catholicism in order to live in their society, and those who didn't convert were killed or tortured. So this idea of religious division meant that interbreeding between the two, like all the races, was not as much of an issue, and race is very much more on a gradient. So you have like, you have the Spaniards, the Indians and the blacks living in South America. So the Indians and the Spaniards mix is called the mestizos, and they were seen as sort of the pure-blooded elite because they had indigenous blood, so they had claim to the land in that sense, but they were Spanish. So it very much exists on a gradient, whereas in America it's kind of a black or white. On the other hand, Latinx people who migrate to the US find themselves like plunged into this division, and they can't fully fit into either because they're not white enough to be white and they're not black enough to be black. So they live in this confusing conundrum of like, where do they fit in this society? And the answer is they don't really fit. This racial binary that's peddled by the ruling class makes it very difficult for Latin people, and it forces them to pick a side. Their first option is to whitewash themselves so they can fit into the white ruling class world. They do a number of things to prove they are white enough to be part of the world. That's why a lot of third generation children of immigrants don't speak Spanish, because the parents didn't see it as a priority because they wanted them to adapt to American life. Which is sad, because you think of how hard like ancestors fought and older generations have fought to maintain those stories, and that the true history is not forgotten. It's quite sad that that sort of process of aculturalization is happening. So the real tragedy nowadays is that it's no longer just the ruling class who are writing Latin people's contributions out of history. It's Latin people themselves, they're forfeiting their history and their culture in order to succeed in this white and black racial binary in America. So constantly having to repress your Latinness is not easy, and especially when every time you're in a room with the white ruling class, they're going to make you feel like you don't belong. So these sacrifices are often made in vain. The other option is for Latinx people to fall in line with the African American communities, as they have a shared history of oppression at the hands of the colonizers, as well as cultural commonalities. This shared struggle means that black and Latin communities have more in common, and within those communities, Latin people can form their own subgroups, so they don't have to let go of like their history and everything like that. But the thing is now they're both black and Latin. So 60% of hate crimes are committed against Latin people in America, and they have the highest prison population of any ethnic group. This is primarily because of the smear campaign that's being led by the rulers of society against Latin people. The stereotypes surrounding Latin people are not that different to the stereotypes surrounding black communities. So Latin men are classed as cholos, or gang members who are naturally prone to violence and a danger to normal society. Latin men are also portrayed as hardworking but uneducated. And there's a lot of hyper-masculinity associated with Latin men, and that toxic masculinity is never good for anybody. Black women also face two main stereotypes of black women. They're either classed as like virginal and passive, the mother and all of that, the wife, or they're the hot señorita due to their hot temper and fiery nature. That's an actual quote from Wikipedia. This leaves them with a lot of few options. They either have to just be angry all the time or have babies. So when these stereotypes are such a huge part of American culture and media, it's easy for Latin people to internalize those stereotypes and truly believe that those are the only two options for them. If they want to be part of America, they must follow American media stereotypes in order to gain some form of recognizable acceptance from the wider society. The terms immigrant and illegal alien are often used when talking about Latinx workers, even though the majority of Latin workers are actually born in the US, but the media likes to perpetuate the idea that they must be immigrants and they must be illegal. During the Great Depression, around 400,000 Mexican-Americans were deported under the Repatriation Act, which was an act that basically they blamed Latin people for taking American jobs and just got rid of them all, even though they were all born there, most of them. Which is obviously not a new thing for the ruling class to turn workers on each other like that. Don't blame us, blame them. So this whipping up of racism when the ruling class is in trouble is not new, and people are still swayed by these arguments. It goes as far back as colonisation, where King Philip of Spain pioneered the concept of portraying native people as savages, similar to the depiction of Africans during the transatlantic slave trade. In fact, King Philip actually requested that 500 indigenous people were taken to his royal zoo so that people could see how savage these people were. So, not the first time we've been put in a cage. So these methods are still in practice today, but they're not like as blatant about it. It's kind of more like creating these negative stereotypes in the public's mind, and that will create a hostile environment in itself. So by planting these racist ideas and stereotypes, the age-old method of divide and rule is still very prominent. So with Trump and his whole build a wall campaign, the scapegoating of migrants is like nothing new. But this time he singled out a specific group. Trump has declared war on Mexicans, and this has caused problems for all Latin people. This is because there's a common assumption that all Latin people are basically from Mexico, but where they can actually be from 33 different countries, and within that be a mixture of all of loads of different countries and races. They're not one and the same. So due to this generalization of all those Latin people, they're at risk of being treated with way more hostility than they were before. So Trump has preyed upon those who's frustrated with the previous administration, as well as the far right in America. He has hyped up racist ideas in America in an extremely overt way because he doesn't mince his word. He's very blatant about his racist ideas, nor does he discourage the existing racism in America towards Latin people. So since Trump came into power, as many as 1.3 million people have been deported. This is a process, again, like the Repatriation Act. It's happening again. And even though there are at least 52 million hardworking Latin American workers in there. So looking back at history, Latin people have been the only ethnic group who have fought in every war, not to mention all the gold collected during colonisation was used to fund the British, French, Spanish and Ottoman empires of the 1600s. Also, Trump seems to forget that they were here first. Since the election of Trump, there is such a culture of fear now among Latin communities, as they're afraid at any point they could be deported or detained, even though they have every right to remain in the country. At least 32% of Latin people are the most bullied ethnic group in the workplace, even though they're trying to earn a living the same as everybody else. But nevertheless, Latin people are a passionate people, and there's a huge amount of anger towards Trump and his racist ideas. Most will call, people call this ghetto rage. But we have, Latin people have another word for it. It's called malicia indigna here. And this is sort of like an ancestral PTSD towards the colonizers that are still in power and treating them badly, despite the many efforts and compromises that have been made to abide by their societal rules. Even though there is this anger and passion, like most BME groups, being angry at the state has consequences by the hands of the police. As a person of color, you're unable to get frustrated or angry because then the police can decide you're a threat and shoot you. Around 16% of all police shooting victims are Latin. And then there's the possibility that if you're not shot, you could be detained or deported. Fear of the police and the state is an emotion that stretches to all ethnic minority groups, but Latin victims are often forgot about. This isn't the fault of other BME communities, but the state itself. Latin history has been systematically left out of American history, and the exclusion of Latin people from American history continues to this day. Latin people police shooting victims are less publicised because in the racial binary system of America, they count as under the black rather than as their own. So in the face of this systemic racism, Latin contributions and history survive through stories that have been passed down through generations and books and now thankfully the internet. They have known their oppressors for decades and understand the underhand techniques that they use. So Latin people actually represent a real threat to the status quo in America because they're a living representation of a people's history being written out by the ruling class. You know, if Latin people were written back into history, how would they see them? How would we see ourselves? So this racist agenda, specifically in the US, separating people into two categories, does present a distinctive opportunity for Latinx people. As I mentioned earlier, like, they have the two binaries and they don't really fit into either. This means that Latin people can spread a message of, like, survival despite 95% of their population being wiped out during colonization. They're still here and they're still standing. Not only that, but Latinx people can create these bridges between races and can play a very important part in the struggle against racism, because they have the ability to move between the two racial binaries even though they don't fully fit into it. Another remarkable trait of Latin people is that they have embraced this idea of a spiritual homeland since their actual homeland was taken from them. This spiritual homeland is like a conception for all those who share Latin blood, and Latin people, I actually have a pie chart. So Latin people are, on average, 26% Native Indian, 26% Black, 26% Jewish, 26% Lebanese, and 26%, we're not entirely sure. So because we share the blood of so many different races, we are all, like, united in this struggle against our rich oppressors. And as we know, racism is used to divide the working class and keep us fighting amongst ourselves. But the idea of a spiritual homeland can turn cultural nationalism into internationalism. As Manuel Gomez once said, refusing to fight in Vietnam, in my veins runs the blood of all the people of the world, and I cannot be trained in order to shoot my brother.
Now staying with the Latin theme and going back to the music, here's Brazilian artist Celia Barbosa with Funeral do Lavrador, or Funeral of a Worker.
Esta cova em que estás com palmos medida é a conta menor que tiraste em vida. É a conta menor que tiraste em vida. É de bom tamanho, nem largo nem fundo. É a parte que te cabe nesse latifúndio. É a parte que te cabe nesse latifúndio. Não é cova grande, é cova medida. É a terra que querias ver dividida. É a terra que querias ver dividida. É uma cova grande pra teu pouco defunto, mas estarás mais ancho que estavas no mundo. Mas estarás mais ancho que estavas no mundo. É uma cova grande pra teu defunto barco, porém mais que no mundo te sentirás largo. Porém mais que no mundo te sentirás largo. É uma cova grande pra tua carne pouca, mas a terra dada não se abre a boca. Mas a terra dada não se abre a boca. Mas a terra dada não se abre a boca. Mas a terra dada não se abre a boca. Mas a terra dada não se abre a boca. É a parte que te cabe nesse latifúndio. É a terra que querias ver dividida.
This is Pick of the Strike. A round of strikes locally, nationally and internationally. Powerful strikes by school students and action by Extinction Rebellion united last Friday in the fight against climate catastrophe. More info at the beginning of part two of this week's broadcast. The NEU Union's picket line at the John Rome School last week against academisation was still lively on the last of 20 days of strikes since May 2018. NEU Union members at Furness Primary School in North London struck for half a day on Thursday of last week. Workers there have accused head teacher Sylvia Libson of a bullying management style. Workers at Birmingham University ended a buoyant two-day strike on Wednesday of last week. The unit and union members are fighting for all staff to get the living wage. Many low-paid staff there only work 15 hours per week and often hold several jobs to make ends meet, some even turning to food banks. The two-day strike followed a walkout on 28th of June and coincided with graduation days. The UCU union at Nottingham College plans 15 days of strikes from September in a battle over new contracts, which would leave over 80 workers more than £1,000 a year worse off, cut holiday and sick pay, and remove an agreement on workload. Postal workers at a Royal Mail delivery centre in Devon walked out on an official strike on Wednesday of last week. The members of the CWU union in Ivybridge, near Plymouth, struck after allegations of bullying from their manager. Workers at Caro Food Production Plant in Hull walked out on strike for second Monday in a row over pay and conditions. Picketing successfully persuaded some delivery lorries not to cross the picket line. Workers at Sainsbury's Waltham Point Distribution Centre in Essex were set to hold a second 24-hour strike on Thursday. The Usdaw union members are fighting changes to the attendance policy, which are being unilaterally implemented by the company, and which mean that members, including many who have given significant year's service, could quickly end up without any sick pay. Health visitors in Lincolnshire have staged three strikes over pay. The 58 workers, members of the Unite Union, are fighting to be paid in line with the NHS Agenda for Change pay scale. Workers were transferred from the NHS to the County Council in October 2017 and have lost more than £2,000 a year as a result. They walked out for 48 hours from last Monday, followed by 24-hour strikes last Friday and Monday of this week. Outsourced staff at three NHS trusts in Northwest England will strike for pay equality next week unless their employer Compass agrees to match NHS rents. Unison Union members at St Helens and Knowsley Teaching Hospitals, Blackpool Teaching Hospital and Liverpool Heart and Chest Hospitals plan strikes on Wednesday of next week. Workers on the East Midlands train line struck last Saturday against attacks on their pay and working conditions. The line is franchised out to Stagecoach, which has tried to duck paying its share of staff pensions. Over 4,000 Unite Union members at Heathrow Airport were set to strike this Friday and Saturday over pay. Action by security guards, engineers, passenger service operatives and passenger service drivers could see flights grounded. An overtime ban is set to begin on Monday at paint company Valspar. And workers plan a 48-hour strike from 11th of August. Workers are fighting for underpaid work wages for hours worked. And finally, a victory. Strikers at Sellafield Nuclear Processing Plant in Cumbria are celebrating after winning a pay rise. The 180 Unite members, who work as security guards, cleaners, vending, laundry and environmental operatives, held 31 days of strikes. They have now gained a 55p an hour pay rise, which will take them up to £9 an hour.
Workers at work, unite! You have nothing to lose but your chains!
And taking you towards the end of part one of this broadcast, Sound of the V Faction. Union man, proletarian man.
Had a little talent, I had to roam. else, you gotta join your union.
Being proud, proletariat.